This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. November is Men's Health Awareness Month, so Talkspace wants guys to know that being prepared for life's biggest challenges and opportunities means prioritizing mental health, too. Talkspace can help you go beyond fine-tuned workouts, supplements, and productivity hacks. Talkspace can help you fine-tune your inner life so you can succeed in being the best version of yourself in any situation. And with Talkspace, you can get therapy from anywhere and on your time. You can even text your therapist between sessions. If you're depressed, stressed, struggling with a relationship, or just need a little extra one-on-one support, Talkspace is here for you. Plus, Talkspace takes most insurance, and most insured members have a $0 copay. Men's Health Awareness Month is the perfect time to reach out to Talkspace. Now, get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com and save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com. That's Talkspace.com, promo code SPACE80.
Life is unpredictable, but how you prepare for the unexpected shouldn't be. Take ownership of your life planning with Policy Genius to help your loved ones have a financial safety net in case something happens to you. Whether to cover debts and routine expenses or even invest the money and earn interest over time. With Policy Genius, finding and buying life insurance is simple. You can compare quotes from top insurers and could find coverage that fits your needs and your budget. Plus, they offer life insurance policies starting at just $276 a year for $1 million in coverage. It's an easy way to feel good about and plan for the future. No wonder Policy Genius is the country's leading online insurance marketplace. Don't wait for life to make other plans. Protect your family today. Head to PolicyGenius.com to compare top-rated life insurance policies, get your lowest quote, and make a smart move in under 10 minutes. That's PolicyGenius.com.
Hello, and welcome to episode 50 of the First and Goal podcast. I am Ben Roberts, joined by Sim Longa. And Sim, we are another week closer to kickoff. It feels like we're right at the finish line there, and now here soon we can finally start to talk about, you know, some actual games and things like that. But before we do that, we need to discuss the other side of the ball. As last week we talked about everything defensive, and now we want to flip sides and talk about everything offensive. And Sim, before we kind of dive into the staff, the guys on the team, you know, just as a whole, I think, you know, one thing we really talked about last year was how we just wanted to see more consistency on the offensive side of the ball. You know, they really didn't do themselves any favors at all. You know, you think of some games where they just did not get off to good starts, whether that was turnovers, three and outs. You know, they'd start a drive and get a holding call. They just really seem to get in their own way a lot. And, you know, you basically have almost an entire clean slate on the offensive side of the ball. But I think that's the one thing that you really want to start with, is just seeing some consistency on the offensive end.
Yeah, absolutely, man. You want to see consistency on the offensive end. And I remember last year, we were talking, and it was like, you just want something that you can point to and be like, well, we at least, you know, we're going to do this well. And last year, you didn't see it. You know, you have the Indiana State game where it seems as though everything's going right. And obviously you kind of take that for what it is. But then you have games where it looks like that team has never even like played an offensive down together. And then you have, you know, signs of life and games like against like Michigan State, obviously Illinois, which obviously that's interesting to mention that game, as we'll get to later. But you know, games where, yeah, you see some stuff and you're like, damn, all right, cool, like we really, like we might have something here. And obviously that didn't materialize from a win standpoint, but not even, it didn't even pass the eye test in terms of what we were seeing. And like you said, that's as a whole with this Purdue team, that's what you're looking for, is just some type of consistency, but especially from the offense, man, because there were just far too many games last year where, like you said, you know, we come out the gates, it's a three and out, and then you look up at the scoreboard and, you know, you're down three scores. And when we talk about that complimentary football, the offense has to do its job. I mean, even if you're not necessarily going down and scoring every drive, sometimes you need to be able to get a couple first downs and be able to, be able to flip the field. Just something like that, just to even give your defense a break. So, yeah, just really, really hoping for kind of bare minimum of just some consistency that you're seeing from the offensive end. And like you mentioned, like you basically have an entirely new offense. I mean, you have transfers all like at every like you have at least what four transfers across like every seemingly every position group, with maybe the exception of your running backs. At least four transfers. So you're gonna have some new guys in there for sure, but yeah, we just want some consistency. So I'm cautiously optimistic of that this year.
Yeah, and not only new guys on the roster, but almost an entirely new staff. And that on the offensive side, that starts at the top with offensive coordinator Josh Henson, who will also be coaching the tight ends. And he's a guy that's been around the block, which we will is a theme, especially on the offensive side of the ball. This entire staff is well versed. For a lot of knocks on Coach Walters, I think the biggest one was that he did not really surround himself with a very good staff, and more specifically, a very experienced staff. And credit to Coach Odom, who has really done that. That just doesn't mean that, that there's automatically going to be success there, but man, it's just a world of difference as we kind of go through these staffs and kind of, how much success these guys have had. And when you look at Josh Henson, 25 years as a coach, the past 3 years he's been the OC at USC. Where they've been really, really good. Last year they led the Big Ten in passing. He also helped coach Caleb Williams, who won a Heisman and was the number one pick. And then prior to USC, he was at A&M and Oklahoma State. And he also spent 7 years at Missouri, with four of those, with Coach Odom. So, just I think the exciting thing is, how well he did at USC the past few years. And you really, are excited to see kind of how that carries over, not only with offensive general, but just, last year there was a lot of things that went wrong with the offense, but I think, Sim, one thing that really had us scratching our heads was the play calling. The play calling never really seemed to make sense, never really seemed to get in a flow. You had different guys calling plays. You didn't know who, if they were calling plays in the booth, if they were calling plays, down on the sidelines. There was never any consistency. And you really would like to think that this year, and hopefully in years moving forward, that you're gonna have that with Coach Henson. And even if like the stats don't jump out, especially early on, you can at least see like that the play calling makes sense.
That was no, that was literally what I was about to say. Is like you said, you were listing off the, how he was at USC and USC had, what is it? It said that they had his offenses finishing in the top 10 nationally and passing like six times, I think scoring offense five times. So obviously, clearly, like when the talent's been there and guys are up to snuff, that they've clearly been able to produce. And I, but my thing was more of just like you said, like last year, you just, again, you didn't really feel like there was an identity. You didn't really understand a rhyme or reason as it went to play calling. And then obviously, when you let your OC go, and you don't really have anything there, in terms of people who are experienced in call and calling plays, you can't really that. And I think that even goes back to even what like your game planning. So my hope, and again, kind of like an expectation, is just like at least with John Henson, now leading the offense, is that you're at least going to see some things. Like, you're going to see some signs of like, oh, okay, in terms of the way that the plays are being called, and you're going to see there's kind of like a rhythm, maybe a rhyme and reason as to what's going on, as to, how things are being done. Where, again, where it might not statistically be as beautiful as what he was doing at USC, but I think, visually what you'll see, it will give us that, oh, okay, this is what we're trying to work towards. Like, you can see, okay, I think we're like, this is what we're trying to be, and you'll be able to see remnants of that, signs of it. Again, and for me, that's fine, because if the execution is fine, the execution is there, and you can see the effort and whatnot, I still feel like, there's a possibility that the offense will be able to do its part in terms of, again, going back to that whole thing about complementary football. So, yeah, you mentioned too, like, his pedigree in terms of how much time, 25 years in college football. And also something I think was actually pretty interesting, and I apologize if I'm stealing this tidbit from you, but he went to Oklahoma State, and he actually played on the O-line. And so when he was at USC, he was actually an O-line coach there as well. And I think that's kind of something interesting about Odom's staff, is that there's guys who there's a lot of crossover in terms of what their skill set entails. And I think that's good, because I think it only lends itself to more positive conversations, like, and enriching conversations, like when they're, when they're talking about guys to go out and get, when they're talking about schematics and game planning and, that type of stuff. When you have more voices in the room who kind of know, who kind of have more of like a 360 understanding of like, in this case, of the offense, I think that just helps. That just helps in terms of like, okay, what direction are we all moving in? We're all moving in lockstep and kind of all being on the same page. So, yeah, I just very excited to
No, I
see what
agree.
this with this with this what this offense can do, and especially John Henson, because he seems to have his own pedigree of being able to be successful, just at being OC, and he's had a lot of time in it. So yeah.
Yeah, and not only the part about where, a lot of these guys played the positions that they're coaching, but I think another very important thing is, and it'll be a theme as we kind of talk about the different coaches on the staff, is how much crossover there is, and how much familiarity there should be. So it's not like one guy is bringing in a system, and then this coach, who doesn't know him, is gonna try to coach to this, system he's never been a part of. I think it's really key that there's so much crossover with this staff, and so they should be pretty comfortable with each other. And they should, to your point, as you're game planning, recruiting, everything that goes into that staff, you should, know what each other's looking for, what they want, and that can only help you.
Yeah, no, I agree, man. When you have that type of experience and you have that crossover, that overlap, like you said, you have guys who are on this staff who have either been with Odom in previous stops, or maybe they've worked with each other in previous stops. Yeah, that cohesiveness, it's gotta help. I think it's gonna, I think it's gotta help. I genuinely do, man.
And so Henson is going to be the OC. He's also going to coach the tight ends. And I want to just touch on the tight ends briefly, as this is probably Sim
It's
the
rough.
biggest, probably the biggest question mark, definitely on the offensive side, maybe on the whole roster. You lose arguably the best tight end in the Big Ten, with Max Clair going to play at Ohio State, but you also lose your backup, Drew Beaver, who went to Minnesota. So there's not a lot of
It's not a lot of
experience there,
experience, yeah.
probably a lot of just question marks there. Come next week, we'll have a better understanding when we see the actual depth chart.
Right.
So we're just going to kind of talk about these guys individually. You have a couple returners. You have two guys who were there last year, with the big one being George Burhan, who has a lot of potential. He was kind of plagued by injuries. But you know, he had six catches, 77 yards, and a touchdown. You got a guy who's got all kinds of size that I'm probably the most excited to see, who came with Coach Odom from UNLV, and that's Christian Earls, 6'8", 280 pounds.
Jesus, big boy.
So, you know, the reports are that, you know, he's pretty athletic for that size too. So when you hear that, you just kind of, you know, he is a guy who obviously is not gonna be Max Clare, but you know, Max was really good, you know, running down the seam. I think that was one of an area that was probably underutilized. And he'll probably just go bananas at Ohio State up the middle with Jeremiah Smith on the outside, but that's a whole nother talk. But you know, when you see a guy with that size and that athleticism, to me, he's probably the one to really watch for.
Yeah, no, I the like you said, that tight end group, it very much so, like I think we were talking last week, you know, I think it was with the D line where it was kind of like, oh, you have some potential here, but you know, you kind of have to hold your breath. I mean, you're really holding your breath with that tight end group. Yeah, a guy like Christian Earls, you know, 6'8", 280, to be athletic at that size, that can be really advantageous depending on how that actually looks. I mean, I haven't actually like seen any tape on him, but yeah, I mean, I think the reality of it is too, in the tight end group, you're gonna probably need someone to step up who like you're not necessarily expecting much from. You know, like you said, none of these guys really have a lot of playing experience. It's good that, what is it, Christian Moore and Christian Earls both come from UNLV. So again, I think from a familiarity standpoint, like you have that. But nobody here is someone who you're pointing to and you're like, yep, that's, you know, that's tight end one right there. So there's definitely, in my opinion, there definitely seems to be some opportunity there, but you're gonna need one to two guys who can show like, yeah, like it might not necessarily be like you know, we're all Big Ten quality, but you know, serviceable in not just pass blocking, but also in receiving as well.
Yeah. And just to touch on Christian Moore just a little bit, he did come from UNLV. From my understanding, he's kind of more of like a hybrid fullback tight end. 6'3", 250 pounds. So it'd be interesting to see kind of how they use him. And then you got a couple of newcomers, with Rico Walker coming from Auburn, and then Luco Pochinelli, who followed Coach Hinsaw, who we'll talk about here in a little bit, from
UCF.
UCF. So, like you said, a lot of opportunity there. And it just seems like one that, like, we really won't know until we see some actual game tape and kind of
Right.
see how they want to use these guys.
Right. I think with the tight ends, man, it's just like one of those like they just can't stick out in a bad way. You know what I mean? Like it just can't be some stuff where we're on here talking about, damn, you know, like we're talking about like, you know, key plays that might have been fumbled up because of, you know, because a tight end player, you know, sitting there talking about we're yearning for, you know, better tight end play. We don't necessarily need to have, you know, like a Tyler Warren or a Max Clair, but you just have to have, they just can't stick out. They can't stick out in a bad way. That's really, at least that's my thought.
Man, it would be nice to have a guy like Max Clair, huh?
That
That'd be
wouldn't
pretty
be half
cool.
bad, man. It wouldn't be half bad.
All right, let's switch over to the offensive line. They are being coached by Vince Weiss. He followed with Coach Odom from UNLV. And he's another guy that's been around for a long time, made a lot of stops prior to UNLV. Was 6 seasons at Virginia Tech, was also at Memphis. Interestingly, he also played at Oklahoma State. So I do not know if they played at the same time, him and Coach Henson, but they both played at Oklahoma State. The big thing is, if you look at Coach Vince Weiss, the dude just, like, if you had to draw a picture of an offensive line coach, Vince Weiss is what he would look like.
This bro, yeah.
The dude just looks like he was born to coach offensive linemen. I mean that in the nicest way possible. Like, he just looks like a guy who was born to do it, and you can see why. He's had a whole lot of success. When he was at UNLV, they were one of the best rushing teams in the country. So, you know, that's one thing where he's going to need to coach the guys up. Much like the tight ends, there's a lot of areas for opportunity. You know, they really hit the portal hard, which they really, you know, kind of had to do. But, you know, you got some guys in there. You have a little experience. One guy, Joey Tanoa, he played in 10 games for Purdue last year, and a former four-star recruit from Notre Dame. And yeah, I apologize. Isn't that Vance Vice? I don't know why I said Vince, but Vance Vice. So, and that's even more of a coaching name anyway. Like, if you hear a dude named Vance, you're like,
He is
okay.
right.
But yeah, Joey is one that kind of stands out as the former Notre Dame recruit. You know, there's some interesting guys there from really prestigious schools. And then, you know, you got a guy like Bacon Collie. He played 11 games last year. So it's a kind of interesting mixture of some guys who have been around the program and then some new guys as well.
Yeah, well, and also too, I forgive me if I didn't hear you say this, but what do you got? Three guys, is three? You have three guys on from the O line who are from UNLV. So again, familiarity. So that kind of at least makes you feel better in terms of from a coaching standpoint of what Vance is trying to get these guys to do. And it's like you have three guys who understand, like, yo, no, this is what he wants us to do. So when you talk about like guys being able to coach themselves, players being able to coach themselves and be coachable to each other, that helps. Like you said, yeah, we got a couple guys who played last year. But yeah, I mean, you're just like you said, I think this is another group, much like with the tight ends, where it's going to be interesting to see when the depth chart comes out next week of who's starting, and then kind of seeing what how things go in that first game, and just see too if I'm curious to see if depending on how the game goes, if they're how willing they're going to be to kind of try out maybe some different combinations. Because those first few games of the, I mean, the first two games of the year, you'd like to think those are more like winnable games. So if you would have an opportunity to one, get more guys more like live reps, and two, to be able to try out some different combinations, you'll be able to do so. So that way, at once you properly get into this season, which we could genuinely say is starting with that USC game, you're confident about, okay, this is the O-line we're going to go with, but also knowing that you have some other combinations that you can put in the event of injury or something like that. So, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of guys here. Like I said, you have that familiarity, some continuity. But again, at the end of the day, just like with the tight ends, it's going to be one of those groups where you'll need to see the we'll need to, we'll examine them best by the eye test once the live bullets are flying and we're seeing how they do. But like you said, with Vance and his credit and his and what he's been able to do, just historically, you again, it's one of those things I think you're going to see signs of, okay, this is what we're trying to get to. We might have some games where you're like, okay, yeah, I think the guys are figuring out this is the style that we're gonna play type shit. So, fingers crossed, man.
No, I agree. And you know, I think it speaks to the coach too when you're able to bring that many guys from your previous school. You know, especially kind of in this day and age where they can go kind of wherever. And you know, for him to bring that many guys specifically from his position, I think it just speaks to, you know, the type of coach that he is. Just a couple other names just wanted to highlight. So you have Marcus Easley, is a transfer from Georgia. Braden Joyner, transfer from Auburn. And then, you know, I'd be remiss if we didn't bring up Ethan Trent.
Of course.
to who was put on scholarship, and you know, really excited to kind of see him and see him out on the field there. But like you said, Sim, like this is one where I have a feeling the depth chart that comes out Monday against Ball State, it may not be the same each week with this O-line spot. I think you're going to see some guys kind of moved around. And you know, you hope that you eventually get to like a core five, but this is one where I wouldn't be shocked if you saw a whole, not a whole lot, but I wouldn't be shocked if you saw switches, especially that first month.
Right. No, I agree, man. I agree. I think it's going to be one of those where you kind of have to earn it week in and week out. And if there is a small game of musical chairs from week to week, you shouldn't be entirely surprised about that.
Yeah. All right, let's switch over to the wide receivers group, and they'll be coached by Coach Cornell Ford. He also came with Coach Odom from UNLV. He's another coach again who has been coaching for 20 plus years. He's actually a Gary, Indiana native. The pretty interesting thing about Coach Forward is the different experience that he's had. So he's been a position coach for quarterbacks, running backs, wide receivers, safeties, and cornerbacks. So all around. Prior to UNLV, he was with Toledo, and also with Coach Odom at Mizzou as well. But Sim, this wide receiver group is one again, you know, I feel like we're kind of, if you haven't noticed the theme, new guys. But this is one where you had to replace a lot, but, and I'm not gonna like dog anybody specifically, just talking about the wide receivers in general. You had to replace a lot, but that's not necessarily a bad thing.
Yeah, no, I mean we had some guys last year, and I mean, like you said, I'm not gonna sit here and try to shit on guys. I'm not doing that, but I think what I'm probably more trying to say is that really, regardless of how last year went, you were gonna need to probably make some changes at the wide receiver position, and go into the portal and get some guys. And the one thing I see with this wide receiver group is I see there's some high upside here for some of these guys based on where the schools that they came from. There's some high upside for what they can do in terms of producing. I think it's headlined too, yeah, by Michael Jackson III, who he played at Georgia last year, and he played at USC before that. So I'm sure he probably has a little bit of familiarity with John Henson. But if you these this is a group where, he and Michael Jackson, based on everything I've read and seen about like from terms of like fall camp and whatnot, he seems like the guy who's really stuck out as being your wide receiver one. But I also think that there's opportunities for other guys who. If they'll be able to get some looks, they'll be able to get some catches, and if you can get, I guess, better production from your wide receivers this year, I think you don't it won't necessarily be like all big, one or two. I think it can be something where you have four guys who are really kind of giving you who are showing you signs, showing you like, okay, yeah, an ability to be able to make plays and to contribute and help us move, help us score, and that'll help us just be a more high powered offense.
Yeah, no, and I think, you know, Michael Jackson is the name to watch. You know, I feel like the dude was just born to play, especially like in the NIL time. Like, there's just so many opportunities when you name Michael Jackson for him to
Big
go have
facts.
a lot of NIL opportunities. There's a lot of things you can do in the stadium. That'll be fun to see. But first and foremost, the dude can play too. And so really excited to see him out there, not only as a wide receiver, but it sounds like he's going to be like one of the main returners, on the specialist side. So really excited to see him. The one guy who probably brings the most experience is EJ Horton Jr. He was at West Virginia and also Marshall. 30 games under his belt. The stats don't like really jump out at you. 26 receptions, 446 yards, and three scores. But it really sounds like, Purdue probably sold him on opportunity. And he can kind of be that veteran voice. You have a guy like Corey Smith who came in from Tulsa, an Indiana native. Again, probably opportunity there, but I think kind of the interesting thing is these guys they brought in, and you talked about Michael Jackson a little bit at USC, but he was at Georgia last year. Like, these were guys that the staff went out and got that didn't necessarily bring with them. And I think that kind of speaks to guys, they saw them on tape, they said, we want them to play for us, and they went out and got them. So really, that to me is kind of exciting, to kind of see how that'll play out.
Yeah, no, I think that's a good point, man. These are we talk, we were talking about earlier in terms of the amount of experience that this coaching staff has. And so if that gives you some level of comfort, then I think what also goes with that is having a level of belief and faith in terms of their ability to evaluate talent. And so if they're out here looking at tape on guys and being able to be like, actually no, like bring it, like let's reach out to him. This is a guy who we can, we can do some things with. Think that's somewhere where you just kind of have to trust their evaluation skills. And like you said, like there's probably a number of these guys who, because they didn't bring them from their previous stop, they probably sold them on the on opportunity, but also opportunity along with your skill set and putting in the hard work. Like this can be something special here. And so, and I think with Corey Smith too, we were talking about it before we recorded. He's from Brownsburg. And I want to say I read that he actually wanted to go to Purdue. So I mean, I feel like that's kind of if that's actually the case, I feel like that's kind of that's probably a pretty significant thing because, I mean, when you're going to the school you want to go to, I feel like in terms of your passion, your kind of commitment to this shit is probably going to be up more because you're just kind of like, yeah, this is where I wanted to be, and now it's like, okay, if this is where you wanted to be, let's it's time to make work. It's time to make do. It's time to get to work. So yeah, one thing I do also notice about all the wide receivers on the depth chart, if there is like one knock per se, I don't really know this is a knock, seeing that I'm not fucking tall myself, but like you don't necessarily have one of those like 6'4", 6'5" guys in terms of like someone who you think is gonna play right away. There is like it was Jaleel Hall who's 6'4", is a true freshman. But everyone else though is 6 foot 6'1", 6 foot 6'1". Like, that's all it is for the most part. So you think there's probably a good chance that in quite a few of these matchups, maybe not necessarily with whoever I'm, and again I'm going with Michael Jackson III being wide receiver one, maybe not in his particular matchup, but for guys in the slot, for guys as wide receiver two, wide receiver three, there might be some opportunities in terms of just having a flat out size advantage. And look, man, if your hands are strong enough and you're able to win the routes, this. It works, you can start boxing people out. Maybe Panner will be like, yo, pull up on us after the season.
No, that's a good call out of something, to definitely watch for. As we wrap up the wide receivers, just a couple other guys, a couple guys whose names you might have heard of who were on the roster last year. You got Dylan Morissette and also Ahmad Branch. And then just one other guy I had to just to throw out there. And I don't know much about him, I'll be honest, a transfer from Georgia, but I really hope that he pans out because it'd just be fun to have a guy named Nitro Tuggle out there and out there balling. So
Right.
hopefully he can show up and show out. But if your name's Nitro, you got a fan in me, and I'm gonna root for you.
This dude. Oh, yeah, if they still make if they still make that energy drink, NOS. I mean, I'm just saying.
some NIL opportunities there maybe as well.
Right, well, NIL vibes get him right.
All right, so with the running backs, it's actually coached by the lone holdover from the staff previous, and that is a Purdue alum as well, Lamarque Conrad, in his third season as the running backs coach. Prior to that, 5 seasons at Miami of Ohio. He's probably got the most talented guys there, led by, of course, Devin Mockabee. We won't spend a whole lot of time talking about Mock because everybody already knows, especially
We
how
know
I
his
feel
work.
about him. We've spent a few episodes talking. He's a Boilermaker in the truest form. He's got a chance to set the all-time rushing record. He's a stud, so won't spend a lot of time with him. But they did bring in a couple interesting guys. And one guy I kind of want to talk about is from Virginia Tech and Malachi Thomas. And to me, just kind of seeing him and kind of reading about him, he's 6 foot, 220 pounds, had over 1,000 yards rushing at Virginia Tech. He's more of the North-South guy. And, I think there's, to me, a lot of comparisons between Mockabee and last year they brought in Reggie Love from Illinois. And I think Malachi is going to kind of fit that role.
Yeah, no, that's exactly what it seems like. It seems like Malachi and Devin, excuse me, Malachi and Mockabee are going to be that 1-2 punch, very similar to what Mockabee and Reggie Love were last year. Obviously, you hope that they're able to have a more successful year. I think a good amount of that obviously is gonna depend on that O-line play. But yeah, Malachi, he seems like a solid, backup running back, or a complimentary running back rather, in terms of his ability to not only rush the ball, but receiving too. He's not too shabby at that as well. And like you said, coming from a school like Virginia Tech, he's played in big games. He kind of understands what it takes to play football at a high level. So it definitely, if there's one group where you feel like from a starter standpoint, you're like, all right, yeah, probably pretty like we you feel pretty solid about, think that that's running back.
No, I would agree. Think you're good there when you got a guy like Devin Mockabee in the backfield. You feel pretty good about where you're at. So let's wrap up the offense with the big news of the day and talk about the quarterbacks. And before we get into that, just want to touch on the QB coach as well. That was Darren Henshaw. Again, another coach with wealth of experience, been a coach for 26 years. The past 2 years, he was the OC and QB coach at UCF, where he also played quarterback, which included, a pro career playing for the Browns, and some other teams. So, he was a dude, back in his day, been around the block and just another one of those guys that has that coaching experience. But the thing that I like is he probably has a little different style of coaching coming from UCF with Coach Malzahn. And so kind of really interesting to see how he pairs and meshes with Henson, because as far as like coaching crossover, pretty much everybody else has some. He really doesn't have much of a crossover with a lot of the staff. But that could also be a good thing to, bring some different insights and bring some different, things to run within the offense there.
Yeah, no, I mean it's a different voice, and like you said, his maybe not having, we've been speaking so much about like the familiarity and continuity of guys on this staff. Having worked with Odom, either whether it was at UNLV or was at Missouri or what in Arkansas, guys who've worked together, maybe not even necessarily with Odom, but with other guys on the staff, and to have Henshaw, who's a guy who really is kind of, not even to say this in a bad way, but is like the outlier per se. It's not necessarily a knock against you because he still brings with him, as you just listed off, he brings with him a wealth of experience. So the some of the thoughts and I'm sure the insight that he's able to provide from his experiences, I'm sure it just kind of adds more into that pool of like when we're talking about conversations. And he himself was he was an OC. So in terms of his conversations directly with John Henson, they can be able to kind of speak their own kind of like same language per se, their own kind of dialogue, to hopefully be able to kind of figure out, okay, how do we want to do this? How do we want to move? What are we looking for from our quarterback, from our quarterback position? So I don't necessarily think it's a knock. I think the fact that he has, like I said, that he's like kind of an outlier, but he still brings with him so much experience. I think that only adds to what we could see specifically in Henshaw's case and coming from the QB, but overall for that offense.
No, I agree. And the news of the day, of the week, whenever you're listening to this, but on Thursday, Coach Odom announced that Ryan Brown was going to be the starter. As we, within the past week or so, it seemed to kind of really start to trend in his way. And so I don't think it's a very surprising decision. I'm glad that it was made, and you can kind of go into Ball State prep week knowing who QB1 is going to be. I'm really excited to see how he performs. I think, Sim, I don't know if you will agree with me or not on this, but I think he was super underutilized, weirdly utilized last year. I don't think he was used to his potential last year. He was brought in like random times, which I don't think really set him up very well for success. And so, just kind of knowing that he's the starter, and giving him that opportunity, you don't have to bring him in randomly in the second quarter for like a drive. Like, he's going to be the dude. And I'm just more so than anything like excited to see him with like this staff and see how they can work with him.
Yeah, no, man. I think we all, when you hear the name Ryan Brown outside of, I forget what, there was a website today who posted it. They were like, North Carolina transfer Ryan Brown wins the Purdue starting job. But I think when we all think about what we remember from Ryan Brown is obviously that performance he had against Illinois where he did the majority of the damage in just that second half. And it gave us the, like it that's kind of what you fall back on in terms of knowing what this kid can do in terms of not only what he's able to do passing the ball but running the ball too. He was such he's such he's a very good dual threat quarterback. And like you said, there were times last year, after that game where it just felt like he was put in situations, he was put in very tough situations where like he couldn't necessarily, like, he wasn't necessarily going to be able to thrive. And I think too, that goes back to more of like what we were talking about at the top about like the some of the play calling. You have a guy who's a dual threat, and sometimes it was just kind of like, man, like you kind of got to let him use his legs and kind of, he's a guy, like Ryan Brown's a guy to me who kind of seems like you have to let him run the ball a few times to almost like heighten his senses. Like I think about like and I'm not comparing him like saying he's going to be this good, but like I remember like with Andrew Luck, sorry Colts fans, that's it, I'm included in this. I don't like bringing up tough memories. But anyways, but I remember Andrew Luck would talk about how like he needs to take a really good hit early in the game to like really get himself into it. And I kind of feel like Ryan Brown's the same way. Where like he need to run a few plays for him, not necessarily where he's like using his legs to where he's like, okay, yeah, I'm in it now, and then everything opened up because I felt like in that Illinois game, if I'm remembering it correctly, he had some good runs, and the runs then started to open up the throws, and the throws were like they were the throws were easier to make, but also I not just I think well one because they set up the when one guys were open, but I think it was more because the run now gave the defense like, oh shit, we got to worry about this. And I think he was playing with, and as things started to go well in our favor in that particular game, you could see his confidence growing. So I'm with you too, man. I'm glad that they announced this now, so we can just kind of get out the way, and now we can just kind of focus on the first game of the year. And I mean, I'm in my own little way, I'm kind of glad it's Ryan Brown, because he's the one, you know, he was kind of the one like proper holdover from last year. And given the fact that we'd seen proper tape of him in terms of what he's able to do, I don't think this is necessarily a bad choice. And now I'm just kind of eager to see what happens when he's been given the keys, and now hopefully between, you know, Henshaw and Henson, they, you know, they kind of understand what are his strengths and kind of what can we do to kind of get him settled into a game quickly, to where he's playing good, winning football.
And I do think it's important too, just to highlight that, like, I don't think like he was, guaranteed anything when he came back. Like he missed
I think he
all
had
of
to get it.
spring
Yeah, I think he had
ball.
to earn it.
And there were, it's a it, it it it's a whole new staff, so it's not like he has any familiarity there. But he had to come in and earn it. He went to North Carolina for a little bit for whatever reason that didn't work out, and so
He
he's
racked up some
back. But
Jordans.
like,
That's what he did. He racked up some Jordans. That's what he wanted to go do. Went out there and got him some PEs. Spun the block, came back. I respect it.
but like he missed all the spring ball, so
Right.
he had to kind of go in there and earn the respect of the locker room. He had to earn it. I think it was a pretty good battle for a while with him and Malachi Singleton. And I just want to kind of highlight him just a little bit, because I do think, there's some value in having a backup like Malachi, who, I think is gonna kind of
Getting ahead of
fall under the
himself.
radar a little bit, but he's a dude that can play too, man. Real high recruit out of high school, came from Arkansas, dual threat as well. And given some time to work with this staff as well, like, I think they can really develop him. Also, he's a younger guy. Ryan Brown won it, but you have a couple of pretty solid QBs in that room.
Yeah, no, man, I agree. I think the fact that the battle, like, that decision was made so late, like you said, man. I don't think Ryan, like, I definitely don't think that Ryan Brown came back and all of a sudden, you know, he was the incumbent. Because yeah, like you said, there was no one, and then in this coaching staff who was like, oh yeah, work with Ryan last year, it was lit, blah blah blah, and was able to kind of speak to him and just kind of like, you know, bolster him up like that. I genuinely feel like, between all of the reps that happened, that like Ryan Brown won the position. But I also think too, with Malachi Singleton, the fact that he was in it for so long, I think that should give you some good, again, good feeling of like, God forbid something happened to Ryan Brown, if he gets hurt or something like that, that he'd be able to step in and also play winning football himself. I think that was what I think that's what Odom said today when he was talking to the press, and he said it. He was talking, you know, like he's like, I feel like he was talking, saying that they felt like every that all those quarterbacks basically like that they felt like they're capable of playing winning football. And so I think it's just more of like just degrees of like, okay, well, like we just feel more comfortable with Ryan right now. But that's not to say that, you know, Malachi or even Evan or any of the other guys, that they can't, or that they're not making strides in that direction. It was just kind of like, all right, Ryan's kind of showing us more of what we want at this time, to where we feel like he probably gives us the best chance of being able to go out and win, playing that winning football that we want from day one. But yeah, I think it's definitely always good to have a backup who also has had some live reps and had some game experience himself. So yeah, just I quarterback is actually one of those positions where I also do feel kind of, I do feel pretty good in terms of like, no, I actually think we're going to have some really competent and good quarterback play this year. And that's key. That's really important.
Yep, no, I am with you. 100%. And I think it's a testament to the guys that are in that room, but also feel pretty confident in the staff as well, and how they can put those guys in spots to do well, how they can coach them up, you know, call the right plays at the right time. You know, I think it's a good combination there. And it's probably what I'm most excited to see, you know, is to see like how guys like Ryan Brown develop. And, you know, there's some question marks, like we talked about, you know, especially at the skill spot. But as long as everything holds up, I think everything is there for Ryan to have a pretty good year.
Yeah, no, I mean he's got the good. Obviously, we're just talking about the running backs; those seem pretty solid. And then, you know, but obviously, I think that's probably the group offensively for sure that we feel, you know, most comfortable with. And the wide receivers seem to have a lot of depth there. Of course, you know, there's kind of that wait and see with the O-line and even kind of with those tight ends, but there's definitely some tools around him to where, you know, where he's able to have a successful season. And again, I think necessarily being quarterback and having a successful season doesn't necessarily mean that Ryan Brown's going to like just have, you know, 7-8 games where he basically does what he did against Illinois. But I think it's more about like, you know, him being able to make the throws when he's supposed to, being able to use his legs, and just be, you know, be smart with the football in general, you know, protect that thing and not, you know, obviously not being charitable with it. And, yeah, I think he's got the pieces around him to where, again, we can play competitive, consistent, and hopefully winning football.
I'm right there with you. And to me, the most exciting thing is we get to find out what's going to happen here in about a week. So depending on when you are listening to this, we are about a week away from the opening game against Ball State, and we can actually see what's going to happen on the offensive side of the ball. And, you know, I'm just excited to kind of, we've talked about this for a few weeks now, and we'll do, you know, a little preview show next week leading up to it. But, you know, we're right there where it's finally time to see, you know, who's going to go out there, who's going to play well, how is the staff going to do? Like, there's so many question marks with this team, with this offense. Right now, everything is, yeah, let's go. But, you know, we're finally going to be able to see kind of how these guys look out there.
Yeah, no, I think we stop going from hypotheticals to based off what we're seeing off of proper game tape. And I think that's, you know, we've been doing this basically all off season, you know, of just talking about as we got guys in about, oh, man, well, like this could be this and, you know, kind of, you know, fantasizing in terms of what various positions could be, what various, you know, what the offense could look like, what the defense could look like, you know, how's this coaching staff going to do XYZ. And yeah, like you said, in a little over a week, we actually get to start seeing, okay, what can this team actually be? And I'm excited. And of course I'm nervous and, you know, it's going to be cool next week to finally be talking about, hey, like we're going into a proper game week. I'm sure next Friday I'm going to be a mess. I'm sure on the way up to West Lafayette on Saturday I'm going to be even more nervous. But it's just going to be good to finally kind of get back to it. And really, too, like we were talking about this a bit offline, it's going to be nice to just get to finally start working towards putting last year behind us. Because I think, yeah, obviously, like last year was just – it was so, so bad. It was so rough. And for – the way that you've seen in terms of the support of Purdue football from a fan base standpoint, you know, we just want to be able to kind of turn and look forward and just being able to have some new stuff to talk about, some new and, you know, a refreshed batch of optimism. And so it's just nice to know that like we did it, you know, we're about there.
Yeah, no, I agree. And thank you to everybody who has listened throughout all of the off season, who has stuck it out with us. It's been fun. You know, we've had some great guests on. We've had some great interviews. But, you know, now it's time. So That is the offense in a juggernaut. Hopefully we, have at least given some names to be on the lookout for. And like we talked about, we can actually see those guys out on the field here soon. But that'll do it for this episode. Want to thank everybody for their continued support, for their listening, for the reviews, for all the interactions on all the media platforms. And like them said, we made it, guys. Next week we're previewing an actual game. So have that to look forward to. But most importantly, boiler up.
Yes, sir.